It's a True Faith Podcast, International Weekend Edition. You've got myself, Alex Hurst, and Norman Riley. This is our one third of the season review of Newcastle United season to date, which has been full of plenty of downs and a few ups recently as well. So me and Norman are going to get right into it. How we've seen things as they've gone, why they've happened, and what's going to happen in the future. We do this every season. We normally do them in quarters, but for whatever reason, this is the one-third season review. Just have to say at the start of this podcast, True Faith partners with FansBet. If you're not into gambling and betting on sport and football, then don't. It's not for you, no problem. But if you do, I would advise you, and everyone at True Faith would advise you to look at FansBet, who share one half of their net profits from your losses with selected fan partners like yourself. If you go into the FansBet website and create an account, you can choose a Newcastle United cause for your losing bets to go to, or 50% of them, and you can choose us at True Faith to help keep this podcast free of charge, or you can choose a range of really positive Newcastle United causes on there, stuff like Leeds flags, various supporters branches and stuff like that. So have a look, check out FansBet if you like gambling. If you don't, would never ever advocate someone taking up gambling. If it's not for you, it's not for you, just leave it alone. The other thing to mention is we are on Patreon for £5 a month. You get loads of extra Newcastle United podcasts from me and Norman. This week we've got Norman's Prem Patter podcast with the lads down in London, which is always an absolute treat to listen to. We have got the tactical review we do this week. We're looking at Diarmé and Matt Ritchie's role in the team. Very specific podcast looking at their contribution or lack of contribution, whichever way you want to look at the stats. We've got the Burnley preview. We're going to have True Faith Any Questions, which is a really popular show where me, Norman, and the rest of the podcast team answer any questions sent our way, whether it's on Newcastle United, Mike Ashley, or various other things that crop up, which are quite funny. And then every Saturday we do the Match Day podcast, which is recorded before, during, after the match. Obviously that'll not be Saturday, that'll be recorded live from Burnley. The money that we'll get from this, you good people, the 300 odd people that will have paying us to do this, goes straight back into the podcast. And I'll say no more than that, Norman. Norman's Newcastle United season 18-19, has it been so far better or worse than your pre-season expectations, and why?
It's been worse because I thought in the summer when we spoke that, given that we finished 10th last season, interestingly enough, on Sky Sports, and at the hour before recording this on Sunday evening, they had the 17-18 season review, and obviously it's one of those things you think, oh, I'll watch it for a couple of minutes, you end up watching the whole thing, hoping to see Newcastle goals, and then they did put a few on, and you saw the table at the end of the season, and the fact that we finished 4th... finished 10th, 4th, God, that would have been a dream. Finished 10th, and then you look at the table, and we were only 10 points off Burnley in 7th. We were 4 points off Big Spend and Everton, who finished 8th. And I suppose in the summer, we kind of thought, well, if Rafa's given the money to, you know, to kind of push us on, that pushing us on would have been, you know, challenging for 6th, 7th or 8th. And I think in pre-season, before, you know, everything came out in the wash again, i.e. Rafa wasn't getting every penny generated by the club, I'd kind of predicted us to finish 9th, I think, but with investment hopefully even higher up. The money wasn't given, the players that he wanted didn't come in, and as the season started, 3 or 4 games in, my expectations dropped from we should be challenging to finish higher up the table, because the potential is there with Rafa. He showed it last season, and instead it becomes a case of we just need to survive. So given how I felt at the start of the season, it's definitely lower than expectations, but you're looking 3 or 4 games in the season, I think we're finding the position right now where I feel we'll finish at the end of the season, which is 15th or 16th, if he's not given any money in the January transfer window, or if we... You know, we're on a little bit of an upward trajectory at the moment, given my past 2 results. But if we suffer any injuries to 2 or 3 key players and we don't get investment in January, then it's going to be a real struggle.
So do you think that the last couple of results are more indicative of us, you know, as a team that are capable of taking points off anyone outside the top 6? Or do you feel that we got very lucky against Watford to win that game, and although we played very well and missed a lot of chances against Bournemouth, we're kind of like 1 or 2 Dubravka miracle saves from still being without a win. You know, that's obviously hyper negative from me. But where, like, obviously you're saying that you think that even without investment we're going to be fine. And at the minute we're 14th and we're kind of top of that mini league, you'd think West Ham and Brighton, they're not going to be in the relegation picture realistically. I mean, Brighton have got Brighton maybe, because you know what they're like, but they'll spend in January. West Ham have got 12 points in 12 games, but have got some really good players and then have shown that can get results. So with us being top of that mini league from 14th down to 20th, do you think that the kind of Cardiff, Huddersfield, Fulham trio that you've got at the minute, do you think that they are the bottom three and we won't have to worry about it that much? Or do you think that, we're actually probably even, especially with investment in January, maybe even better than what we've seen these last two games?
Going to the matches first, Watford, we had slices of luck. But then again, the reality is luck evens itself out over the course of the season. And given the kind of, the lack of luck that we'd had in all most of our matches prior to the Watford match, I think, it would be incorrect to say, we won that game just purely through luck and nothing to do with ability. I thought we actually played really well in parts, and, it was almost we reverted to type in the second half. By that, I mean we played as we did last season, in that we let the opposition kind of dictate a lot of the ball. We stayed in the game until the 50th, 60th minute, got the goal and then held out. Obviously, Watford had a really good chance at the end, but in that sort of 30 minutes after we scored or whatever it was, they didn't look too threatening. We kind of took the sting out of the game. And I think Bournemouth was just an excellent performance. And that's what the players have got in the locker. I mean, you do feel that every Newcastle United victory is like achieved through a Herculean effort by the players and by the manager and the coaching staff. And we're in a lucky position where we've got a manager and coaching staff and players who probably will put in Herculean efforts most matches, and that'll be enough to see we're right. I'm not saying that we're necessarily stronger than some of the squads that might finish below us. And when you say I'm confident we'll be all right, I'm confident that we'll avoid relegation by finishing 15th or 16th, possibly even 17th. But it's going to be a struggle. We're not going to be out of relegation danger like we were last season with 5 games to go. I'd be very surprised. I think it could go down to the wire the last 2 or 3 games of the season. Again, that might be the case if we get investment in January, but I'm sure we'll discuss that in a bit. It's a big if and a big might, but with the squad we've got at the moment, barring injuries and the fact that Rafa's staying until the end of the season, I think we've got enough in the tank to avoid relegation, because we can pull good performances out, as I say, through that kind of that Herculean effort. And other teams, regardless of the money they've got to spend, they're just not going to be managed very well. I think Cardiff will get relegated. I think Fulham have dropped a massive bollock appointing Ranieri. That's an absolutely atrocious appointment. I might be back at the end of the season, completely eat me words, but to drop Jokanović because of Fulham's defensive frailties and to bring in Ranieri, I mean, I can't understand the logic to that at all. I mean, his side at Nantes, the second season at Leicester, they were terrible. They won the league, which is great, but and you can't take that achievement away from Ranieri. But oh my God, every single kind of every single kind of thing that could have aligned for them aligned that season. And I think we got more of what Ranieri's actually like as a manager the following season when they're really struggling, replacing him with Shakespeare. And then Ranieri went to Nantes, and Nantes conceded a load of goals in France. It's a really odd decision. So I think they'll struggle. Huddersfield, I really rate Wagner as a manager. He's a bit one-dimensional, but Huddersfield, have done incredibly well to stay up and to still be competitive, but they just don't score enough goals. They just do not score enough goals, and I don't think they've got the pulling power in the January transfer window to bring anyone in who will be able to bang the goals in that they need to stay up. And Southampton, as long as Mark Hughes is there, are absolutely bollocks, because they're atrocious as well. So yeah, we are relying on other teams being shocking and making poor decisions, but at the same time, because we've got to a certain extent a squad of battle hardened players in a relegation battle, that was last season, they picked up a lot of experience, and Rafa knows what he's doing. So yeah, with what we've got, I think we'll be okay. And I say think, I don't say we will.
My take on it is that you have, you're right, you looked at the table in the last season. I hadn't realised until this season how much of a confidence reliant side we are. Now, you saw that last season with the 9-game run, kind of this time of year. You saw it kind of this last January a little bit as well. But looking at that Spurs performance and that Spurs game when we lost, but we really shouldn't have lost that game. I mean, you know, sloppy defending and lack of quality finishing and some really bad luck hitting the crossbar, hitting the post, missing various other chances. It's funny to me, or in fact, it's not funny. It's worrying to me how from that Chelsea performance, a dodgy pre-season didn't really affect the confidence levels for that Spurs game, and then we'll go to Cardiff and we're shit. And it's just from that point on, the lack of confidence in front of goal or as an attacking force just seeped out of this set of players at a rate that I've never seen before. And it's kind of like this season so far, you've had a perfect storm. Well, you've had a shite summer, which we all know about, with the club making a huge transfer profit, despite Lee Charnley. Funny thing is, Lee Charnley in the fans forum was saying, well, actually, it was only like we actually spent £2 million more on transfers than we did on incomings because of the way deals are structured. Well, you know, what about the rest of the money? it's almost like, you know, as if it's just transfer spend that you can reinvest. It's like, what about the rest of the money? What about the like £70 million surplus that we should have had? The 50 to £70 million, considering that the club brought in about £170 million turnover last season, you'd think spends about £80 million on wages and then has about £25 million running costs. Like, where's the rest of it? Where has the money gone? But that's not what this podcast is about. So you had all that, and then you had, as an opening set of fixtures, Tottenham, Chelsea, Man City, and Arsenal and Man United in your first 8 games, not to mention Cardiff City away and then Arsenal at home, who were absolutely flying, as it turns out, and Palace away, who are not flying. That's a really, really hard start, and that's obviously seeped into the Leicester, Southampton performances as well and the Crystal Palace performance, and I thought we'd do better this season. But I was wrong about the kind of confidence of the players, and you've had that major issue. Dwight Gayle going on loan, who, for all his flaws in front of goal, was kind of an integral part of that team that did so well. If you remember last season, we really struggled in the league and you had Hosslu playing up front a lot of games. And then eventually, for whatever reason, I can't remember, maybe it might have even been Man United itself or Palace away, one of the two, where I think it was Palace away after Hosslu missed that pen against Burnley at home, where Dwight Gayle started up front by himself and then wasn't out of the team for the rest of the season, apart from, I think it was West Brom against when Slimani went up there. So Dwight Gayle up front worked for us. Now, we brought in Rondon. Now, we have seen emphatically that Rondon works because of that performance. Well, the two performances, really, against Watford and against Bournemouth. So Rondon not being fit all season has been a massive issue. The lack of Dwight Gayle, a massive issue. The fixture list, the lack of confidence, it's kind of all come together to make one shit show, which has been this season so far, and things are immeasurably better after the last 2 weeks and the last 2 wins, but we're kind of top of this mini league, which has Newcastle, Burnley, Palace, Southampton, Cardiff, Huddersfield, Fulham. Now, none of those teams there have shown anything, in my opinion, so far to make me think that they're going to, for some reason, pull away from relegation trouble this season. They're going to get away from it, like, you know, they haven't really been playing as well as they could be, blah blah blah. Fulham aren't good enough. They've got a load of attacking players who are really good and cost loads of money but can't defend. They couldn't really defend last season in the Championship, certainly not as well as Cardiff. And let's not forget, they did go up through the playoffs as well. You've got Huddersfield, who can't score goals or win away from home. You've got Cardiff, who have done a very good job in terms of, you know, getting a good win against Brighton in the last minute, which is massive for them, and beating Fulham. You've got Southampton, like you say, who are fucked as long as Mark Hughes is there. You've got Palace, who can't score. Excuse me, and you've got Burnley, who basically weren't that good last season. If you look at their expected goals and all those kind of stats, should have been towards the bottom of the league anyway. They won a lot of games where they had very few chances, scored and conceded shitloads of chances and kept them out. That's not sustainable long term. And then you've got us, who are decent defensively but don't score many goals. Now, in terms of all of those teams there, maybe with the exception of Cardiff, Huddersfield to an extent, but then Huddersfield are, you know, Huddersfield, we're the one out of all of them who look like we're going in the right direction. Would you agree with that? Would you say that out of all those teams, we seem to be the one with the momentum, the performances and the improvement?
Aye, I would. Burnley's a good shout, actually. Burnley last season finishing seventh, in pretty much not being a particularly good side. They were just they were just consistent. And it sounds kind of contradictory saying they were consistent, but they weren't very good. I don't think they're any better last season than they are this season. They just had, you know, the rub of the green a bit more from the majority of last season. And what they did have was that kind of, you know, that defensive solidity. I don't even know if it's necessarily they had an organised defence. I think what they had was players just throwing themselves in the way of the ball. You know, the players just putting 100% in every match. And like you say, it's unsustainable. And it showed this season because they're conceding goals left, right and centre. Whether or not Joe Hart's playing a part in that, I don't know. But they look absolutely on the last legs to me already. They look like a team that is in a massive downward trajectory. And I think out of all those teams you mentioned, we're the ones that look, I don't know, I think we've got a little bit more about us. And again, I mentioned it, but the Rafa factor is huge. And also, what we do have is we have a really good defence. Our defence is excellent. In terms of the centre halves that we have at the club at the moment, I don't recall a time when we've had such a strong quartet. I mean, quintet if you include Clark in that, but you know that many good centre defenders to choose from. We need obviously cover at left back and right back really to a certain extent, but in the centre of the pitch, we're really solid. And I just think that defensive organisation means that we are in a better position than all of those other clubs.
It'll be keeping Mike Ashley up at night, you know, the fact we've got five arguably first team centre defenders, probably on first team wages as well. Like, we'll be absolutely buzzing about the fact we've got 6 points. He'll be thinking five centre backs, what a waste of money. But yeah, so to finish my point, yeah, it's been much worse than expected, but I see us going in the right direction compared to other teams. I mean, you look at Bournemouth and Watford got a 6th and 7th league with 20 points. But Watford should have beat where? Like, they should have taken one of those chances. And if you score first against us, you win the game. But for that, you're right. When we scored that goal, we looked like a much better team and a much more threatening team than them. And particularly Bournemouth, for the full 90 almost, despite the fact that Bournemouth have their spells, we looked like a better team than them. And that's a team with 20 points in 12 games, which is very impressive. And if you look at, just to touch on Burnley once more, Burnley's only home win came against Bournemouth, and they beat them 4-0, and Burnley had 4 shots on goal in the whole game, just 4 shots, and they all went in. So it was kind of like last season repeating itself. And then you've seen Burnley's results since have kind of been proof that, you know, this isn't going to last very long for me. We might talk a little bit later about our massive game with them, but I think we'll be all right. And although it shouldn't be this shit, we should be up there with, you could argue that if Rafa was back properly, we'd be up there with Bournemouth and Watford in 6th and 7th, or on that top 4. But definitely around, you know, the Wolves, Brighton, Leicester, who aren't going to get relegated and are going to have a much more comfortable season than we will. That's where we should be if the manager was back properly. But we'll see what happens in January. The next thing I want to ask you about, Norman, is have we deserved more? Do you think we should have more points based on the performances we've put in this season? Because a lot of fans seem to think that's the case.
I don't know. You know, Tottenham home, I think a draw would have been a fair result. Chelsea home, probably a draw would have been a fair result. Cardiff away, the draw was the right result. Both sides were absolutely abysmal. Southampton, again, both sides were abysmal. Southampton probably shaded it in terms of how many times they had the ball in the box, but those who were utterly inefficient with it, they didn't deserve anything more than a point. Leicester at home didn't deserve anything out of that, even though Leicester, you know, you could argue that they only had two chances to put them both. We still were poor. We took 3 points against Watford, despite the fact that for 60 minutes of the game, Watford were the better side. Bournemouth was definitely a deserved victory. Man U, for the majority of the match, i.e. the first 65 minutes, we deserved a win. But Man U are a class side, they came back and beat us. I think, you know, a draw in that match would have been a fair result. But it's football. It's just swings and roundabouts, isn't it? We probably deserve points in games last season that we didn't get, and we probably got points last season that we, you know, we ought not. We've got on the balance of play. It's just how it is. I think 9 points. You know, you could argue that 10 or 11 points might be a more fair reflection of how we played in a couple of other games. But no, I don't think we can really turn around and say, oh, if it wasn't for bad luck, we'd have like 15, 16 points on the board, you know, because ultimately we've had luck in matches as well, i.e. specifically the Watford match.
Yeah. And I put this to you people listening at TF Weekly Pod to try and get some sort of feedback on this. And it was a pretty mixed response. I think your response there, Norman, was very good. Before I go into the kind of listener responses, I agree with you. I think for a team that's 14th in the league right now, that is what got scored 6 goals at home and three goals away. So we've got 9 goals in 12 games. You're never going to find yourself much higher than lower mid-table or in a relegation scrap. And let's not forget, it feels pretty good right now. We're 1 point away from the relegation zone and 2 points away from 19th place. We've got a bit of a 4-point gap on Fulham, who, was, as you've said, was just changed the manager. And I totally agree with your assessment of Ranieri in that position. I think it is a really, really bizarre replacement. And a nice guy that he clearly is. But, I mean, Jokanović was a nice guy.
I mean, seriously, mate. Seriously, Fulham, I'm not kidding you. In my opinion, and again, you know, if I'm proved wrong, it just, you know, confirms the fact that I know virtually fuck all about football. Mm. But they'd have been better off going for Steve Bruce than they would Ranieri in that position. I'm not kidding you. But there you go. We'll soon find out whether or not I'm talking shit.
I mean, Fulham have conceded 31 goals so far this season. 31 goals, that is...
It's absolutely spectacular.
That is some goal. I mean, to concede 4 goals to that Cardiff side, wow. But anyway, I'm getting off point. Yeah, I think you can't create as little as we created and expect to be any higher in the league, but I think with the defensive solidity that we'll have, I think we're clearly better than Cardiff, Huddersfield and Fulham. Now, we've got Fulham at home and Huddersfield away back-to-back games in December. I don't know whether you're going to be at Nerf, but we're definitely going to Huddersfield, me and you. And then I don't know whether you're coming up for Fulham or not, but they are. That's like the season right there. I remember the relegation season we had... who did we have? Villa at home and West Brom away about the same time. This is under McLaren, and we took 1 point from those two games. And that's Villa who were like had like 3 points from 22 games or something stupid at the time, and we failed to beat them in one of the most demoralising days ever at St James's Park for me. I don't know if people remember, but like...
Colaccini put us in front, right?
He did, and I was telling the lads at half time that the game was going to be called off because it was so wet. It was the pitch looked, you know, and obviously McLaren after the game was like, well, if it hadn't been raining, like, Steve, you tried to set up Newcastle a counter-attack against one of the worst teams in the history of the league. It's got nothing to do with the rain. But these games anyway that we've got in that week when we've got Fulham, Huddersfield away, Fulham at home, that's your 4 points there. You're looking at 4 or 6 points there, or I'd be worried with anything else. So We'll know a lot more after those two games, I think, about where we stand. But in terms of deserving more, you're right. I don't think we deserve. I think we're lucky to get a point in Southampton. I think we're lucky to get a point at Palace if on the balance of play. We should have probably beaten Brighton, although we're very poor in the second half. You're right about Leicester. You could argue we deserved at least a point for Man United away if the referee had done the right thing, blah, blah, blah. And a few people have pointed that out, that if the referee had done various things, then we might have more points. But we're probably where we deserve to be. Looking at the goals scored column, Christ, Palace. Palace have only scored 8 goals this season, which is worse than us. But then Palace, look at Southampton as well, only scored 8 goals this season. So any team that fails to find the back of the net as regularly as we do is going to be struggling, like I've said. But some really good points. David McAndrew said, maybe we do deserve more points, but we've often relied on Dubravka to make like vital match-winning saves. So if your goalkeeper is one of your players of the season, then chances are you probably don't deserve where, you know, your height where it'd be. But some of the responses that we had on Twitter, really good. Alex Wilson says, apart from what should have been 6 points away at Cardiff from Man United, it's fair considering the shock and hand Benitez has been given to where we are in the league. Our very own Adam Widdrington absolutely deserve more points. Based on performance, we deserve more points for Spurs, Cardiff, Brighton, Man United and Chelsea. And that's not a bad way of looking at it. You think a point against Spurs, 3 against Cardiff, like even 1 against Chelsea, Man United and Brighton, well, that's like 1, 2, 3, 4. That's an extra 7 points, and you're up there on, like, you know, above Brighton and next to Wolves. So it's funny how it turns out. I mean, it's an interesting argument from Adam. Sam
says...
Yeah,
but then let's say it's a draw against Watford, knock 2 points off. Cardiff Palace and Southampton possibly shaded against her. Palace and Southampton, take those 2 points away. There's 4 points gone. So, yeah, you know, you can make, get like an extra 5 or 6 points in games you might deserve something from. But then you take away the points from the games that we didn't deserve, maybe didn't deserve anything from. It's just, you know, I think maybe 10, 11 points would probably be a more fair reflection. But Out of an hour. To see him getting in the realms of Lakes Water 14, 15 points is a bit, it's a bit fantastical, I think.
Yeah, the vast majority of people joining Cross, maybe a point or two, but it hasn't been a case of being robbed by referee decisions, misfortune, etc. Realistically, a lot of people seem to think, well, I should have maybe 3-4 points more based on performances. If that's the case, that's a good thing, you know, and that suggests, again, that there's more to come from this side. And I think there is as well. So, you know, the future looks a little bit more bright than certainly did a few weeks ago. Okay, Norman, let's talk about players of the season so far. Which players have unexpectedly impressed you? So I want a player from you that's unexpectedly impressed and a player which has underperformed your opinion so far this season.
I think, you know, no surprise, Federico Fernandez has been absolutely he's been fantastic. He's a kind of old school defender. He just defends. He's really good in the air. He puts in those kind of tackles that, you know, really get the crowd going, and he's a leader and an organiser. He's been an absolute bargain. I mean, he's already justified the fact that we paid $6 million for him. He's one of those where you think, like, if Lascelles got long term injury and Fernandez was played alongside Shea or Lejeune, we wouldn't actually miss Lascelles as much as we would have done last season, because Fernandez is, as I say, he's got the same kind of presence as him, and actually a little bit more experience. I'm not saying he's a better player, or he's going to go on, you know, or Lascelles won't go on and have a better career, but I just think he's been that good that we could cope better with an injury to Lascelles than we could have done last season. A shout out for me for Yedlin. I think Yedlin's been really good. There's still a major question mark over his positional sense defensively, but I think he's just got better, like, almost month on month since Rafa signed him. He had a bit of a bad spell, obviously, as we know, last season after the hammering home to Watford. But I think he's been really good this season. As I say, if he doesn't kind of improve his positional sense over the next 2 to 3 seasons, and once his pace starts going, he might be found out a bit as a defender. But I think I'm being overly critical there, but I just think he's been really, really good. And Dubravka's been an absolute revelation, but we kind of knew that he would be, and anyways, due to how he played towards the end of last season. In terms of disappointments, it's easy to say Perez. It's almost too easy to say Perez. But I think, you know, you look at Perez's career at Newcastle. That's just what he is. He's a £1.5 million player from the Spanish second division who goes through fits and starts. Sometimes he'll go through 3 or 4 games of being excellent, really good at clinical finishing, and then other times he'll just be utterly non-existent. I think you could possibly say that Richie's a look to me like he's been a bit of a declining force this season. When you compare the impact he's had, you know, in the Championship season and in the second half of last season. But to say he's been a disappointment, I don't know. Again, I feel that's a bit overly critical. I think Shelvey's possibly underperformed, but again, I think that's more down to the fact that Dwight Gayle was sent out on loan at West Brom, and Shelvey hasn't had the person up front who can utilise, you know, his talents better. So I don't want to be very critical and say any people have really, like, been, you know, have underperformed. I just think some people have been a little bit disappointing, but to a certain extent, it's almost been out of their hands.
Yes, and I broadly agree in everything you say there. Really quickly on Yedlin, I kind of get the feeling Yedlin's one of those players that when the team plays well or when the team wins, he always has a great game. And that might sound obvious, but there are certain players that doesn't apply to. I think Yedlin at his best seems to match the team. And, like, you know, yes, his defensive position's a little bit out. And again, just as Perez is £1.5 million striker from Tenerife, who's repaid that value however many times in terms of contribution to Newcastle United, you'd say Yedlin at £5 million in the Premier League, you aren't for £5 million going to get someone who's got every single box ticked in terms of attribute, mm-hmm. particularly defensively. But what you do have is someone who has made countless interventions in our penalty area this season, who's made a huge impact going forward, particularly when the team have been struggling to create stuff. And you've got a player who opposition players don't like playing against, I don't think. He's mm-hmm. They might like running at him. Wingers might like running at him. And sometimes I think he gets let down a little bit by Richie. Defensively, but, you know, down that right-hand side, he causes oppositions a real headache, and I think his performances this season, like you say, have been a real positive. And he's absolutely, if you look at the start of last season, he hadn't nailed that place down. You know, him and Mankio were kind of vying. It's not even a question these days, is it, about who starts at right back for Newcastle United? So fair play to DeAndre Yedlin. I agree with you, Perez. I think Perez has been disappointing this season, and I don't think he's shit, and I don't think he doesn't deserve to play, but he definitely needed that spell out the team when he was dropped. I think it was for Brighton, for whatever reason. And then it's a bit like last season, he got dropped, and then he came back in, and all of a sudden he's a different player. He just needs that rocker sometimes. And I was at the Watford game, and the boos definitely happened because he wasn't reacting to nothing. But I would love to know. I would just love kind of to kind of talk through in private, you know, someone who boos one of our own players onto the pitch, like what the thought process is behind that. Like, what, just describe that situation. I mean, that's what it is. Describe the situation why you were booing one of our own players onto the pitch who went on to score the winner. But I think Perez overall has been disappointing in terms of the standards that he hit at the start of last season. Last two games, fantastic, really good. So let's hope it's the start of something positive. And yeah, so I put this again to the listeners, and Federico Fernandez has had, you know, unbelievable amount of mentions. Loads of mentions for Dubravka as well, but Fernandez is an absolute fan's favourite. And I know, Norman, you'd had a few drinks at this one, but Palace away, I mean, he was just absolutely magnificent then. Would have lost that game if he wasn't playing. That's the only player on the pitch who was saying that. If he wasn't playing that day, whether it was Shaw, whether it was Lejeune, his tackling against Wilfried Zaha was so crisp and so perfect, and timed so well in crucial positions and crucial blocks, that's when I realised that this is a real player here. Obviously, Rafford had him before at Naples, and he'd come from Swansea in a tough team, where they were relegated. But he just seems to have got better and better and better as the season's gone on. And you're absolutely right that defensively, with the centre-backs that we've got, I mean, it's a real joy. I'm going to put you on the spot, Norman. Who are Newcastle United's best centre-back pairing, presuming everyone's fit?
Right now?
Well, obviously Lejeune's injured, but yeah, presuming everyone's fit, who plays for you?
Presuming everyone's fit, I'll tell you what, I'm going to say Fernandez and Lejeune, but the reason I'll say that is just because Fernandez has just been better than Lascelles this season. I think he's been better. Now, to actually see if they're all fully fit, who would you put on the side? It's really impossible to answer, because Lascelles is a really fantastic player, and you know, there's every chance that Fernandez might have a dip in form. But right now, put it this way, if they're all fully fit, I wouldn't be disappointed if the two centre halves were either Lascelles and Lejeune or Fernandez and Lejeune. I think Lejeune is, like, when he's fit, is vital, because I just think he's an excellent player. And I think Shea's kind of a lesser version of Lejeune. But even then, even if Lascelles, Shea and Fernandez are fit, I would still rather have Shea and either Fernandez or Lascelles, because of the importance of having at least one ball playing centre half. So there you go, mate. I don't know if that answered your question.
It doesn't. I agree. I've never, ever advocated, ever, three at the back. I thought Rafa would do it sometimes, but I've never thought that's what we should play. But part of me just wants to see these three magnificent centre-backs, Lascelles, Fernandez and Lejeune, in the same team. We could even go for something absolutely batshit. Like, you remember when Joe Kinnear played Colaccini in holding midfield for no reason against Man City away in the relegation season? Just do that, Rafa, one game. Just see. Just play Lejeune, holding midfield, see what happens. How bad could it go? Imagine him and Diarmé kind of holding in front of the two, and then we'll just play, like, you know, four really attacking lads ahead of them. But I would love to see them all in the same team one day, and just try it, see someone try and score. Maybe like Man City at home or Liverpool at home, like later on in the season, you know, when Rafa tends to go ultra defensive. Stick those three in and see what Sergio will do against them.
I'll tell you what, mate, if Diarmé got injured, I'd rather that Lascelles or Fernandez were playing as the defensive midfielder than Isaac Hayden, purely because I just think Isaac Hayden's head is just not in the right place to be playing at Newcastle anymore.
It's not a bad trope, but Lascelles, wow. holding midfield. The bloke can't pass a ball. Like great defender, great bloke, great defender. But I'd rather play Dubravka there. Like in terms of ball playing ability.
I think the overall point was is how little confidence I've got now in him as opposed to what I think of themselves as a whole midfielder.
Yeah, that's like, you know, would you be rather stuck on a desert island with no water and no food? Basically, that's what I'm putting that type of question to. Who would you rather have? Hayden or Lascelles playing whole midfield? But Adam Woodritten again made a point, and this is one for you, Norman. Shelvey's been incredibly important too. Thoughts on that? Because Shelvey seemed to have a very impressive start. And then it's tailed off a little bit, and now you've seen that the last two games where we've scored our goals and picked up our points, it's been Kate and Diarmé. Your thoughts on Shelvey this season, and if he gets back in the team for you at the minute?
Well, I just said, didn't I, a few minutes ago, that I think actually Shelvey's been one of the players that I've been disappointed with. But again, you know, I would caveat that with the fact that I don't necessarily think it's his fault, because he is a magnificent footballer. I think Shelvey's tailed off significantly since the third, fourth game of the season. And I just think it's because he's had nothing ahead of him. And Shelvey, his vision and his passing ability are better than anyone I've seen at the club for years, really. And he's just missed having a mobile centre-forward. Whether Rondon getting fit and to get an extended run of the team would change things. I mean, who knows? I'd imagine it would, to be honest with you. But like you say, Key's been so good. He was so good against Bournemouth, and he was excellent when he came on against Watford, that it would be a tough decision to drop Key. I wouldn't want to see Key drop, basically, at the minute. It's a tough one. Would I want to see him drop for Shelvey? I don't know. Because Shelvey is so good that you just know for a fact he's going to be back in the team at some point. He's going to be doing really well. But overall, he hasn't hit the heights of that he can. But, as I say, that's because he's been the team lacking confidence and in a team that hasn't given him the tools that he needs up front to show what he can do.
What about playing them together? What are your thoughts on that, Shelvey and Key?
Key and Shelvey, I'd love to see it. I'd love to, depending on the match. I think there are games where you could play Key and Shelvey together. You look, Fulham at home would be a classic example of playing Key and Shelvey together. I don't necessarily think Diarmé would be needed the way that he is against a side that is so porous as Fulham. And I think Key and Shelvey could run the show. But there are other matches where Diarmé would be absolutely vital. So it just depends. Depends, I guess, on the opposition. I don't know. Is that something you would agree with?
It would be a big call. So first of all, I'd say that quite damning for Shelvey, and this isn't his fault, is that Diarmé's best performances this season again have come in the last two games. When Key's come on, Diarmé's looked like a much better player with Key. I mean, Diarmé's tackling for the whole season, he gets a lot of stick, Diarmé. His tackling stats are up there with the best in the league. He consistently wins back possession more than any other player, or not any other player, but most other players in the Premier League. I think you always need someone in central midfield who has the ability to just run at a player and win the ball off him. I think if you're going to play Fulham, and let's not forget, a lot of games, our midfield two outnumbered in midfield. You've always got Perez on the number 10 dropping back, trying to kind of hurry and hassle and win possession. But if you're going to be outnumbered in midfield, I don't know if Shelvey and Key are your men for that. I think, you know, it's definitely something that you'd like to see, purely because of how aesthetically pleasing it would probably be. But the problem with Shelvey, and Shelvey was fantastic at the start of the season, performances at Cardiff against Spurs, I think he was injured for the Chelsea game, injured for the Arsenal game, and he came back in and you see a real difference. But the worse we've got, the deeper he's played. And I got sent a really good message by someone, and I forget who, which is really bad, but it was a great point saying, against Brighton, when Shelvey picks up the ball, and it was the same in the Championship, the early days of the Championship when we struggled, when Shelvey like literally plays as like a third centre-back, collecting the ball from the centre-backs, the whole team just freezes. And you might get, Kennedy tries to make a run, and you might get, in the past it was Dwight Gayle, and it was more successful, or you might get Matt Ritchie tries to make a run, but everyone else just stands still, because it's like, right, well, Jonjo's got the ball, so it's up to him, what happens now? And I want Jonjo Shelvey receiving the ball kind of 35, 40 yards from the opponent's goal, not in our own half from the centre-back or not on the halfway line, because it just doesn't work ultimately. And, you go back to when he first signed and we scored that fantastic goal against West Ham, I think, at the start of 2016, where he did pick the ball up very deep, finds Jan Mat, great run, great touch, great cross, great finish by Wijnaldum. But unfortunately, we don't have those players anymore, and we didn't have those players doing it consistently then. And Shelvey's great problem has always been, for such a talented player, he doesn't score goals and he doesn't assist goals. And you've seen Key already assist one, and you've seen Key do what Shelvey doesn't, and that's run with the ball in midfield. Now, Diarmé occasionally tries it, but he's not very good at it. And what Key brings that Shelvey doesn't is the ability to run with the ball. And we saw that against Watford. As soon as he started running at Watford's midfield, it turned them round, and Will Hughes pulls them down and will score from the free kick. If Shelvey's on the pitch with the ball in the same position at the same time with the same player in front of him, he doesn't do that. He looks for a pass sideways, or he looks for one over the top or through. And they are good balls, and they do work. But ultimately, you've got to say that Newcastle United is an attacking force, particularly in centre midfield, hasn't been working this season. And as soon as Key came in, you notice a difference. So for me, Shelvey doesn't get back in the team. And it's not a bad thing. It doesn't mean I think he's finished at Newcastle United. There'll be injuries, there'll be suspensions, there'll be loss of form. But John Joe Shelvey needs to play in the opponent's half of the pitch as often as possible and carry the ball. And until he starts doing that, I think he's a better option for the side. But we'll see. It's a nice problem to have. Like you say, we're so short in central midfield that, you know, I'm the same as you. I don't think Hayden's head's at the right place, and I don't think he can be trusted to play that position for Newcastle. So, yeah, it's a worrying case for any real injuries. But at the end of the day, Shelvey's dropped out of the team. Key's come in, and the team, Key has done well, and the team has done well. So he's got to keep playing there for me. And I think Shelvey's form has really tailed off in the few weeks before the Watford game. So he has been a disappointment. Matt Ritchie and Diarmé, we're going to talk about in more depth this week for patrons, so we'll not go into that now in terms of their performances this season. Interesting one that a few people on Twitter said that Kennedy had been one of the players of the season. And he just, you know, like other wingers before him, he just divides opinion, this lad. Your thoughts on Kennedy Norman this season and his performances?
I think he's an exceptionally talented player, but he's a young winger who is going to produce brilliance and then just be a complete non-entity. He's going to be inconsistent, I think. I think that's just the type of player that he looks like he is. He's on his day, he's a world beater. We've seen it, and he's been excellent in the past past couple of matches. That tackle against Watford was out fucking rageous, wasn't it?
As good as a goal.
And the cross for Rondon was just, I mean, it was just fucking sexual. It was so good. And, you know, this is what it's going to be with Kennedy, I think. I mean, he was great away against Old Trafford, but up to the match at Old Trafford, he'd been terrible. Again, you know, there's a wider point that his teammates haven't been particularly good as well. Like, so, you know, it's not really just a case of him being terrible and the rest of the team being brilliant. But I think he's a phenomenal player. I think that Sey are better with him in it, but he will be inconsistent. And the problem that we've got is that when he's on the pitch and he's not producing the goods, you know, Kennedy's one of those players, isn't he? You can tell after about 5 or 6 minutes whether or not he's going to have a good game or not. You can just tell. His body language, his movement, if a couple of passes go astray, his kind of head hangs a little bit. And then you can tell within 5 or 6 minutes if he's going to have an absolute blinder. Again, the problem is the strength in depth. We don't have anyone who can come in from him. You could say, you know, if he's having a bad game, haul him off on 50 minutes for Jacob Murphy. But unfortunately, there's, you know, it looks like Rafa doesn't particularly trust Murphy. So I think it's just a case of being patient with him when he's down in the dumps and, you know, just enjoying the moments where he's good, because when he's good, he's fucking brilliant.
Well said. Can't disagree with any of that. Finish off this week's podcast, Norman. Give me some predictions. Do you think Rafa will get backed in January? And if so, if not, will he be here next season?
I don't think he'll get backed. I think we might get a couple of loan signings in if he's lucky, and he won't be here next season.
Can't say I disagree, but really, 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 really hope we're wrong. And kind of final position, where do you think we'll finish, considering that you don't think he'll get backed?
Fulham, Cardiff, Huddersfield, Southampton, Burnley. I think we'll finish probably 15th. 14th. Yeah. Fuck it. Let's go mad. 14th.
14th. This is the Newcastle United that Mike Ashley has built. Okay, that's
What's
it for
prediction?
Me. My prediction would be, I think that one of the I think the bottom three will go down. I think the Southampton, one of Southampton, Palace, and Burnley will spend really big in January, and I think two of them will get rid of their managers. One of them will get a bounce, so we'll finish 15th. And I think that whoever replaces Raphinson will get a few quid to spend, but ultimately it'll be too late. And I have a feeling, so I have a slight feeling that because Rafa, if Rafa is going at the end of the season, we might do something in the FA Cup. But that's maybe an ultra positive. This has been me and Norman, and we hope you've enjoyed the show. If you do like the show, consider subscribing to see what it's like on Patreon. And you know, you can always leave us a positive review on Google Podcasts or iTunes. That's always really helpful. This Thursday, we should have another free pod up for you. Considering there's not going to be one at the weekend, or I'll probably record something on the way back when I'm driving back from Burnley on Monday night. We've got two or three people from the Magpie group coming on to talk about what's gone on this weekend, and I'm going to basically play a bit of a devil's advocate because I'm personally very supportive of their actions, but I'm going to play a bit of devil's advocate. I'm going to collate as many negative things as I can from Twitter, and try and get as many questions from people who I know who don't like what they do, and just put it all to them and say, well, you know, come on, answer these questions if you're able to lead the fans in this action against Mike Ashley. Can you explain yourselves? And you know, hopefully it'll come across quite well and they'll be able to answer a lot of questions. So that should be this Thursday. They've agreed to do it. Haven't sorted out finals yet in terms of who's doing it and what time and stuff. But yeah, have a listen out for that. Hopefully they'll be on. Thanks for listening to this podcast, and thanks for listening to True Faith. We'll be back with you soon. Cheers.